Fly James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, if you hear me! Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, well, well. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. So glad to have all of you with us this afternoon. We were absent last week. We were in Chicago, and always nice to be in the Windy City. I'm not from there or anything, up there on some business, but thanks for joining us today. So good to have you along, as always. I'm having a little mouse trouble here, I guess you would call it. My mouse is not obeying me. Did we ever think we'd be talking about such things? I didn't. Anyway, thanks for joining us today. We have a thrill-a-minute show planned for you today. We hope it goes okay. We've got several guests that I think you'll find most interesting. Coming up at 3:30 or thereabouts, we've got Medea Benjamin from Code Pink. She's going to be with us and talk about the AIPAC meeting they got thrown out of yesterday. That was interesting. The last time I reminded Medea this morning that the last time I had her scheduled on the program, she couldn't make it because she was in jail. I forget what it was that time, but anyway, Medea's got such a wonderful sense of humor. Coming up, I believe, at 3:45, with the caveat that as long as Harry Reid doesn't call a vote this afternoon, we're going to have Senator Bernie Sanders on at 3:45, and then along about 4:30 or so, we're going to have Eric Bowler from Media Matters. So there you go, a great lineup today. Once again, Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, Senator Bernie Sanders to follow up. We'll be talking about the credit card mess, what it is, that's coming before the Senate this week, and Eric Bowler from Media Matters coming up around 4:30. So great guest today, and we'll appreciate your input on that as well. Cinco de Mayo, Cinco de Mayo. Everybody, I hope you're having a happy Cinco de Mayo day. I certainly am. I don't know when I've had a better Cinco de Mayo day, unless it was last Cinco de Mayo day. That's celebrated in a big way around here. We have lots of folks from the Latino and Hispanic community here, so we do celebrate that. I want to say hello to our good friend, Joe the Plumber. Joe always lets his mouth override his brain if he does have a brain. I see now he says, again, let me quote Joe the Plumber, that remember, this guy is the darling of the right. Big Sarah Palin backer, loves Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin loves Joe the Plumber and obviously goes right along with Joe's thinking. Most of the people on the right go along with Joe's thinking. That's a fact. And he said, and let me quote Joe the Plumber today, darling of the right. He said, I'd never let queers get near my kids. my children, he said, actually. Yes, Joe the plumber, I'd never let queers near my children. Okay, Joe, that's up to you, but it's good that, to have spokesmen like this for the Republican Party, and I hear them constantly complaining about the left-wing media, the liberal media, and I just want to say that I, for one, am part of the liberal media, and I am proud, and I feel it my duty that when Joe the plumber says something important like this, that I should give him all the coverage that is due for a statement that he makes. And I do feel that Joe the plumber is a very important cog in the Republican wheel. And so when he and Sarah make statements, I will give them as much airtime as I feel necessary. And I do want to thank Joe the plumber for speaking out. Once again, Joe the plumber, representative of the Republican Party. I'd never let queers near my children. Well, well, well. Would you want Joe the plumber near your kids? I think not. I think not. No, man. And, you know, I getting on to this swine flu thing, the panic seems to be dying down, and the media's getting them back to normal mode. God, were they going crazy last week. I'm not saying we shouldn't have a heightened sense of awareness of the threat, but, man, they were way overboard on this thing last week. And did anyone else notice that it came along just in time to push the torture issue right off of the news? It just went away last week. It was the torture news was reaching a crescendo. Everybody got an outcry. We got to do something about this. And along came the swine flu, and there went the news about the torture. It just went away. But I do want you to remember, once again, and feeling it my duty to give the people on the right their just dues, do remember, torture is not American. Torture is not American. I do want you to remember that. It's not an American tradition. It's Republican. That's what it is. So, and I do also want to mention, as long as we're talking about homophobes, Joe the plumber, we all remember Miss California, what was her name, Carrie Prejean, something like that, Prejean, Carrie Prejean, how she spoke out and how, of course, the people on the right latched onto her right away as being a spokesman for them and the anti-gay and their anti-gay movement. Yes, and they were so proud of her, a beautiful young woman having the morals and the upstanding character to be able to speak out against gay marriage in the gay community. And the fundies went crazy saying, isn't it wonderful that we have a beautiful young woman like this as a spokesperson for us? It was wonderful. And I must admit, I had a tear in my eye when I read about her family values and all, and what an upstanding young woman she is, and how she's done everything right in her life, and how she's a homophobe and proud of it, and the Republicans, and now we find that she's been posing nude. Oh no. Oh yeah. Posing nude. Oh my. And then we find out that she had the boob job in order to win the title. What a shame. What a shame that hypocrisy once again rears its ugly head in the Republican Party, huh? What a shame. Oh, my. You know, you don't have to you don't have to look very far for hypocrisy in the Republican Party, do you? You just don't have to look very far. My, oh, my. And then I want to say hello, a special hello to all of our friends in the United States Senate, some of whom I formerly had a lot of respect for, who voted against the issue of allowing bankruptcy judges to work with banks to release some of people filing bankruptcy to get their home mortgage reduced. Some of them called it, on the other side, the cram down bill. We all know why there were 12 Democrats that voted against it. Let me say 11 Democrats and one phony, Arlen Specter being the phony. I am not hardened enough politically to welcome Arlen Specter into the party. I don't care if that I just don't care if him and Franken would give us the 60. I'd rather keep my ethics and my standards and not have a SOB like Arvin Specter in the party. Because we all know why he switched over, and it was not because the Republican Party had left him. He's proven that in two votes so far. He's still very much a part of the Republican Party. Came over for political reasons, for selfish, self-serving political reasons, and that's the only reason he came over. And so I'd rather he would have stayed. I'd much rather he would have stayed. He's actually an uglier example of self-serving political, how political things are, as was Jeff Sessions from Alabama. So, Ben Nelson from Nebraska, Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, and I'm very sorry to say, a gentleman I've met many times, Senator John Tester of Montana, Evan Bayh of Indiana, Byron Dorgan, another one I've met many times from North Dakota, Max Baucus from Montana, Senator Byrd from West Virginia, Copper from Delaware, Blanche Lincoln and Pryor, both from Arkansas, Johnson from South Dakota, and, as I said, Democratic pretender Arlen Specter. There's a couple others in there that are Democratic pretenders as well. I would not support the reelection of any of those folks under any circumstances at all, ever again. I will not ever speak out on behalf of any of those people again. It comes down to a choice of working for their masters, the banking community, who owns them. I could go into all the millions of dollars that have been thrown their way by the banking industry, but I won't bore you with the numbers today. However, I know you are well aware of the many millions of dollars that have been contributed to their campaign finance funds, and therefore they march to the beat of the financial community, just like we knew many of them would, and voted with the banks as they were told to, and voted against the needs of their constituents. Makes me want to puke when I read that list. It really does. Some people on that list I never have admired very much. As you well know, I've never thought very much of Mary Landrieu, and yes, you can all give me that story. Well, I know these people have to vote against some things sometimes because they live in conservative communities and we wouldn't get them elected, and they vote with the Democrats 60 or 70% of the time. And no, I don't want pretenders in my party. I'm a proud Democrat. And I'm not saying you always, 100% of the time, have to vote with the president or with a Democratic issue. Not 100% of the time. But this was an issue that was so Democratic Party in principle. This was an issue for the people, for people losing their homes. It was a Democratic issue. If ever there was an issue that deserved the support of anyone claiming to be a Democrat, this was it. And what happens? 12 of them. 12 of them vote with the Republicans on this issue. And, of course, the Republicans, all of them, every single one. Does that mean that the Republican Senate members are all, every single one of them, bought by the banking industry? Or do some of them actually think that the principle of letting the banks have runaway profits like they did for so many years, do some of them actually think that's okay? Evidently. And yes, I do want to mention the fact that, my goodness, what a shame that Fred Phelps and Michael Savage cannot go to the United Kingdom anymore. British government has published a list of people permanently barred from entering the country for fostering extremism or hatred. Good for them. And a couple of them are folks you all know and love, of course. We've got talk radio host Michael Savage. And we have Fred Phelps, who happened to found the Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas. And we all know that Fred is out there fostering hate every chance he gets, a man of God. And Michael Savage also is not allowed to enter the good old UK anymore because of his hatred and because of saying that autism, in most cases, is a brat who hasn't been told to cut the act out. So, Michael Savage is not going to be traveling. And, you know, I can just hear his rant on that in the first, you know, who wanted to go there anyway? I'd hate to think I couldn't go to a country because of something I had said. I'd hate to be branded as somebody who indulged in hate speech. And that is most definitely hate speech. Real hate speech. Going to talk a little later on in the program, if we have time, about somebody else that engages in hate speech almost every day, and Rush Limbaugh, and how the people at Clear Channel are having a bit of a difficult time. Once again, I made myself some notes here today and can't find them. I see John Murtha's nephew. They found that he's getting no bid contracts worth millions of dollars. It's time for Jack Murtha to get out of Congress. I do not admire the way he does things. I do not admire these pork kings like he is. I do not like somebody as a member of Congress who takes advantage of the power that they have and gives million-dollar contracts, no-bid contracts, to their relatives. It's wrong. They know it's wrong. They hate it when they're found out. And this has been found out, and now, once again, he and his nephew are having to defend themselves against something that's very, very, very wrong. And any question about it, it's very, very wrong. I see Sean Hannity. Big man that he is, has not accepted Keith Olbermann's deal. You know, a while back, Sean Hannity agreed that he would be waterboarded for charity to prove that it isn't torture. He said waterboarding was simply taking somebody's head and dunking it in water. And he promised to do it for charity. And so MSNBC's Keith Olbermann offered last week or week before, I forget when, $1,000 to military families for every second Hannity is waterboarded. And he repeated the offer this week. Silence coming from Sean Hannity. Sean, come on, man up. I don't blame anybody for not wanting to be waterboarded. I wouldn't want to be waterboarded. I wouldn't do it. Would not do it. But if you're going to get on national TV and national radio and talk to millions of people and say, well, it's no big deal, I'll be waterboarded for charity. And then you won't accept a challenge from Keith Olbermann for $1,000 a second. Think what you could get if you could stand it for, gosh, John, just for like a half a minute. That's nothing, is it? For an act that you and many of your Republican friends don't seem to think is terribly inhumane, Surely you could stand it for 30 seconds or so. Huh? And get $30,000 for your favorite charity? Of course you would want to do that, having bragged about how you would do it. And Mr. Oberman giving you the challenge not once, but twice? Certainly. Certainly you would want to do that if you got nothing to brag about it. But Sean Hannity is not much of a guy. Sean Hannity is a wimp. I think we all know that by now. Little Sean, wherever he goes, got his bodyguards with him. I had a chance to see all that at the Democratic National Convention this year. Sean was there, and he was acting like he was a big man. He was acting like a big, brave man because he was in the belly of the beast. He had the courage to attend the Democratic National Convention. He'd show them. Yeah, he'd show them how brave he was, walking around with his bodyguards everywhere. And the little door to the cubicle where he broadcast his show from had two bodyguards posted there at all times. Mm-hmm. Tough guy. Tough guy. Mark and I didn't have any bodyguards at the convention. Who would want to attack Mark and I? Mark Levine and I? Nobody, because we're such nice guys. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the program. I think we're going to take just a moment's time out, and we'll be back very, very shortly.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
It was late in the morning of November. She was loading up the wagon in the rain. She said she'd be back in the morning, but she never came through here again. I'd see her in the market. She never had much to spend. These days the market's an old parking lot, and she never came through here again. Never came through here again. Some say it's so landing, and someone took her earring. They found a blue ship rattling on the ground, and she never came through here again. A photo of a woman on a llama, but she never came through here again. And if you should see her, she may be your violin. Tell her that I miss her and you'll ask her when she ever come in through here again.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I love the Traveling Wilburys. I really do. They were just good. And let's face it, they were good. Maxine by the Traveling Wilburys. Hey, we've got an interview coming up in a minute, and we're going with Medea Benjamin from Code Pink. And we'll razz her a little bit about it the last time. I already did today when I spoke to her. I asked her where she was and reminded her the last time that we had a date for an interview that she was in jail. And she takes that real well. She's quite a gal. And so we'll wait a couple of minutes before we dial her up on the line. And we've got Eric Bohler coming up around 4:30 today and Senator Bernie Sanders at 3:45. So a great lineup on tap. And of course, as Senator Sanders' representative told me today, with the caveat that Senator Reid doesn't call a vote this afternoon. Sometimes they can call from the cloakroom, sometimes not. But I told him, I said, well, I'll just call Harry and tell him to have no vote during that time. And he laughed. let's see here once. Let's see if we can go ahead and give Medea a ring. Of course, you guys are always right in on all the phone calls here. Na na na, ringy dingy. Six. One. And the last number. Let's just see what happens here. And let's call. Talk amongst yourselves. Why isn't it ringing? Oh, don't tell me we have another one of those days. Says it's ringing, and it isn't. Well, let's just try it again here. God, I love live radio. And see what happens here. Actually, it's supposed to be ringing right now. And it isn't. Well, this is working out very well so far. Not ringing at all. Let's log out of this phone thing and log back in again and see if we have any luck with it. Sorry to bore all of you with this. See what happens here now. Yeah, this is professional, right? Of all days. Mm. Styles. Get a song going here. C5. There we go. Who knows?
Hi, this is Maria.
Hello, Maria.
Yes.
This is Guy James from the Guy James Show. How are you today?
Good. How
are
you doing?
Well, I'm very good, and I'm glad to hear you're good. As I reminded you earlier today, we're live on the air right now. About the last time we had an interview scheduled, you ended up in the pokey. So I'm.
That's right, and it could have been the case this time.
I know it could.
That APAC meeting yesterday.
Yes, that's what I heard, and that's why I called you today. I wanted to find out. First of all, I didn't know your group Code Pink was attending the APAC meeting yesterday. I'm glad you did. And I want to thank you for all that you do. You gals are more tenacious than anybody that I know of, I think. I really don't know of another group that's more tenacious about issues than you folks are. So our thanks and congratulations on that. Why did you get asked to leave the APAC convention yesterday?
Well, first let me say why we were determined to get in, and that's because we recently returned from Gaza, where we took a 60-person delegation, which was a feat in itself because it's a region that's under blockade and very hard to get in. But we managed to put pressure on the Egyptian government, got inside, saw the devastation, and really felt like the world can't just let Israel get away with this. Horrible, horrible destruction. There really needs to be investigation of war crimes and some accountability and stop all the U.S. funds that are going to support that. So that's why when we came back to the U.S. and realized APAC was going to have its annual convention, and for those who don't know, that's the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, we decided that we would get ourselves inside there. And when the President Shimon Peres was talking, we got up with our banners that said, "Want peace? Then end the occupation," as well as other banners that said, "Lift the siege of Gaza," and things like that.
Were they kind to you as you left?
I don't think kind is the right word. In fact, my body is sore today. I got dragged out in a very, I guess manhandled is the proper word to use for that. And I'm suffering from it today. One of our people got tackled and thrown to the ground. One person got pulled out in a nicer way. I guess she was lucky and got a security guy who wasn't too mean. But all of them did put their hands tightly over our mouths so that we couldn't keep shouting out things like diplomacy, not war.
Were these private security guards of APAC or were they police from D.C.?
It was a combination. There were security for the convention center as well as staff people from APAC.
We're talking with Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, who did attend briefly the APAC convention yesterday. Medea, you mentioned that you went in to Gaza through Egypt. Have you tried going in from the Israeli side as of yet?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's our next venture. We're going to take a couple of groups again through Egypt, but we're determined this time to go through Israel as well, because it really is Israel that controls both of the borders, the Egypt and the Israeli side. So we're sending a group on June 4th that's going to meet up in Tel Aviv. And the beautiful thing is that we're working with a coalition of groups inside Israel, both Jewish and Arab groups that want to see a lifting of the siege. And while we attempt to go in and cross through into Gaza, they're going to do an encampment at the border for 10 days as part of a focus on the fact that even after a ceasefire has been declared, that there still is a lineup of trucks with medical supplies and humanitarian aid and food and all kinds of things that can't get inside of Gaza.
Yes. I think you brought up an important point that a lot of people don't know, that, of course, there are Israeli groups who are against this treatment as well. Am I right?
There are many Israeli groups. Unfortunately, I think the Israeli voting population turned to the right during this last election, but there still are a large number of Israeli groups, including soldiers that refuse to fight, the Refuseniks, a number of women's organizations like the group we're working with called Coalition of Women for Peace, Rabbis for Human Rights, lots of groups that want to see a change in Israeli policy. And we feel very fortunate to be working with the Israeli community so it's not seen as something that the outside groups are imposing, but really trying to strengthen the voice of those Israelis that are working for peace.
I read somewhere that you said that visiting Gaza this time was, if I can quote you, I believe I have you quoted right, was the breaking point for you and other American Jews. Can you tell me what you saw? Can you describe what you saw that caused you to say this was a breaking point for you?
You know, it's hard for me to talk about God without breaking down and crying because it was such devastation. And I'm a mother. I love my two daughters very much. And like most parents, you think about their safety all the time. And I met with mothers who lost their children. I met with children who lost their fathers. I met with wives who lost their husbands. And so much suffering, so much death, so many people that have been maimed, kids that are now amputees, thousands of people who lost their homes, schools that were destroyed, mosques, clinics, even the UN warehouse. And then so many businesses, you know, in this country we're bombarded with this image of Palestinian men as terrorists, and most of them are just trying to feed their families, and we're taking away their very livelihoods. So many of the businesses were destroyed. The entire northern part of the country that was the area where most of the factories were, those were all destroyed. Dairy farms, farmers' land, even the fisher people can't go out and fish in the sea because the Israeli boats will shoot at them to this day. So we've taken 1.5 million people and basically put them inside a prison. And, of course, they're going to react by doing things like trying to lob rockets into Israel, which is a terrible thing, and we don't want that to happen. But we don't want to see so much violence on from the Israelis either.
Is there any meaningful aid getting into the country now?
There are about 175 trucks coming in every day. But before the Israelis clamped down on the borders, there were 475 trucks getting in it every day. A friend just told me to think of it this way, that Gaza is about the size of the city of Philadelphia that has bridges coming into the city, and over those bridges there's about 4,000 trucks that travel every day. So just think of the goods and materials that are needed to service 1.5 million people, especially when they have problems making their own goods these days, and 175 trucks is not nearly enough.
No, certainly not. Certainly not for 1.5 million people. The conditions, I'm assuming, I've heard, are just abysmal no matter where you look, that very little of it is untouched by the violence that took place recently.
I'm sorry, did you say conditions?
Yes.
Yeah, there's sewer systems that are not working. There's not enough. The infrastructure has broken down. As I mentioned about people not being able to make a living, there's tremendous unemployment. And because of that and because of the borders being sealed, there are young men who are going to work in building these tunnels that go between Gaza and Egypt. Extremely dangerous work. Every week we hear about people dying because the tunnels collapse. The Israelis bomb the tunnels. And while the Israelis tell us that these are for smuggling weapons, I visited these tunnels, and certainly what I saw was that it's the lifeline for getting goods into Gaza. But it's very unfortunate that this is one of the few outlets that people have to make a living.
Well, all of this couldn't have been exactly a pleasant experience. I'm glad it was informative. And I hope you'll keep in touch. We will try and keep in touch when you go back and try and enter from the Israeli side. That should be a very interesting situation. And I certainly are you taking this bigger group this time when you go back?
Yeah, you know, we keep saying we're only going to take like 20 people, and now we're up to almost 60 again on the Egypt side and about 20 on the Israeli side. And it's great that people want to go. And as I've described it, it's a very sad experience. But there's something very strange, which is you leave very inspired as well, because the people are so loving and giving and generous with the little they have. And they're so happy to have us there to tell their stories and see that they're people around the world that care about them. So that's why we have this commitment to keep taking groups back so they can witness for themselves, come back and talk about it, and put pressure on our Congress to try to begin to counter the pressure of this very, very forceful lobby group that is AIPAC.
Well, Maria, you're recognized as a very courageous woman, and your group is very courageous as well. And I want to reserve the right to get back to you when you've made your trip over and trying from the Israeli side again. And we thank you for your insight into this. And once again, I thank you for your courage going and seeing and letting the world know what it's actually like there. We appreciate it very, very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And people can visit our website, codepinkalert.org, and even go with us to Gaza. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you, Medea. Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, talking about her recent visit to Gaza, something that she and the rest of her group will never forget. I'm sure they'll never forget that. And as something I would like to see in person, I understand that it would be very difficult. But the more you know about a situation like that, the more you can help. And a lot of people have looked at Medea Benjamin and Code Pink. They see them on TV. They see them at the hearings and all. And I've heard people say some very disparaging remarks about the people in Code Pink. You know what? Sometimes you have to be a little bit outrageous to call attention to issues that need to be broadcast around the world. Sometimes that's what it takes. And this woman and the people with her in Washington that attend all the hearings, that's not a pleasant thing. That's not a fun thing. But they're doing a great service to people. And I've met many of them. I've met Medea several times. She's a wonderful lady. And just because they cause a ruckus when they go into the House of Representatives sometimes, or any of the hearings in the Senate or the House hearings, that's what needs to be done. If it didn't need to be done, they wouldn't be there doing it. I can tell you that right now. We're waiting on a call, and if all of our listeners will hold off on the phones just for a few minutes, we're waiting on a call from Washington from Senator Saunders. I don't have a TV on here at the moment to see if there's been any vote called for by this Senator Reid this afternoon. So we'll wait and see here. They're going to call us, and when they do, we'll put them right on the line. So if you... if you were thinking about calling, just hold off for a few minutes, and we'll see if the senator or one of his staffers calls in. Like I said, the only reason they won't is if a vote's been called, and I don't know if one's been called this afternoon or not. Maybe some of you know better than I do right now. It's hard to keep up on everything at once. I didn't have time to talk to Medea about one thing of this Jane Harmon situation. I don't know how much more damning this whole thing could be. Here we go. Let's just. Hello.
Hi, I've got Senator Sanders.
All right, we'll go live right now when he comes on.
Okay, hold on, please. Hello.
Senator Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Thank you so much. Last time we saw you was the day after the inauguration, and with the media group we met with there in the Senate office building. It was always a pleasure to see you, and we my listeners especially, the liberal group that we are, appreciate what you do very much. And I know you are involved this week with the credit card situation that the Senate's going to talk about it. The House already has. What are your views on the banks and the credit cards?
Thanks for the opportunity to say a few words about an issue that I think millions of Americans are extremely upset about. What we did recently is I sent out an email to people on my Senate list, and which is, by the way, sanders.senate.gov, and we received, if you can believe it, just in a few days, over 1,000 responses from people who are just very upset with how their credit card companies are dealing with them. And what we heard over and over again is people saying, we, the taxpayers of this country, are bailing out large financial institutions. These very same institutions are getting zero interest loans from the Fed. And then what they're doing is raising our interest rates on our credit cards from, 10 to 20% to 30%. They're doubling rates, they're tripling rates, they're charging us excessive fees. And they're doing it to people who have been paying their bills on time year after year after year. So what you're seeing now is, in many instances, these large financial institutions operating like loan shark operations, just ripping off people, getting as much as they possibly can from people, cutting back on the credit available to people, charging them fees that are beyond belief. And it is absolutely imperative that Congress begin to address those issues.
Now, I know the House voted to curtail a lot of these things, but not to take effect until next year. Do you think the Senate is thinking along the same lines?
Well, I worry, a couple of things. The House did some very good things, and I'm very supportive of what they did. For example, I think many of the listeners will recall that not too long ago their mailboxes were full of all these solicitations. No doubt you received them as well, right?
Oh, yes.
If you can believe it, a few years ago, the credit card industry, this is hard to believe, but it's true, sent out in 1 year four billion solicitations in a nation of 300 million people. And a friend of mine, this is true, a friend of mine apparently put his dog on some name. His dog got a solicitation, so I don't know how the dog ended up using the newly acquired funding, but that's the way it is.
Well, those pet stores, dog go wild in them.
There you go. Anyhow, what we are fighting for is something that's pretty simple. We think that the country now needs a national usury law, because the practices of these credit card companies and banks is usurious. And we have got to say that it is not acceptable to be charging 25 or 30% interest rates. If you go back to the Bible, in the Bible there are a lot of references to usury being a sin. And I just think it is immoral, it is wrong, that when people are most in need, for example, what we're hearing from many of my constituents is that they've had a health care problem. They needed to borrow money for getting to the doctor, paying off a hospital bill. And then when they had to draw on this money, you find the credit card companies raising their rates. So they're hitting them when they're down, when they're hurting. We get emails from young people who are in college, or families trying to send somebody to college, desperately in need of money to keep their kids in college. Their interest rates are going up. We have emails from small business people who in tough economic times are trying to keep their business going, trying to maintain some jobs, and they're losing their businesses because they can't afford these very high interest rates. So what we ended up doing, by the way, is we got over 1,000 responses to an email that I sent out. We published it as a booklet. And if anybody wants to read some horror stories, we obviously didn't use all 1,000. I don't know how many. We have several dozen anyhow, which I think kind of reflect the broad range of abuse that the American people are suffering from these credit card companies. You can get that on my website at sanders.senate.gov.
It makes it for some very interesting reading. I went down through quite a bit of it yesterday, today rather.
Isn't that really painful stuff?
Very painful stuff. And what, like you said, the medical problems that people have, people that are in short-term financial difficulties, lost a job, people that have always made their payments. It's hard to understand when you've been a good customer and paid your bills all these years and then have them come back and say, well, that's not good enough. I recently take a half a moment to tell you here, I know somebody over the weekend told me they were denied a credit card here in the Fort Myers area of Florida because we've been hit hard by foreclosures. And he said, well, they sent them a letter. I saw the letter. It was nothing to do with their own bad credit. Like you said, since they lived in an area that's been hit hard by foreclosures, they couldn't consider them for credit.
Can you believe that? I mean, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Because you live, the people in that particular, all the people who live in that area, through no fault of their own, even if what you're telling me they haven't experienced foreclosure, they're being discriminated against. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And the letter said we didn't even pull a credit check on you just because where you live, we're not issuing any credit cards in that area at this time.
And you saw that letter?
I saw that letter. And
that is unbelievable.
It was from Capital One. That's who it was from.
That is, what we have tried to do in this country is to eliminate what we call redlining. You know what that is?
Yes.
And that is what banks used to do is they used to say, if you're in a minority neighborhood, we're going to either not give you credit or we'll charge you higher interest rates than if you're in a more affluent neighborhood. And we try to eliminate that. We said, hey, every American, no matter what neighborhood they live in, has got to be treated equally. Look at the individual, not their neighborhood. And now you're telling me because the neighborhood is hard-pressed economically that anyone who lives in that neighborhood has got to pay higher interest rates or not get any credit whatsoever. Is, again, that is legal is hard to believe. And those are the kinds of things that we have got to change.
Yeah, there's a big old red circle, evidently, with Capital One around Lee and Collier County, Florida. And it's hard to believe because this is a fairly affluent area in some respects, anyway.
This arbitrary, and this is what they're doing. I mean, people say, I paid my bill my whole life, or 10 years, 20 years on time, and you're now telling me you're going to double my interest rates or cut my credit. Why? And the people say, well, that's the way, and then the people in the credit card company say, well, these are tough times, that's the way it is, don't take it personally. Meanwhile, what we're trying to do is to re-stimulate the economy. We're trying to create jobs. We're providing tax breaks for the middle class, all of which is to try to bring us out of this recession, and we're finding these credit card companies moving in exactly the other direction, trying to withhold credit from people who desperately need it and who pay their bills. So bottom line here is these guys in the credit card industry have been getting away with murder for years. We need to take them on, and in my view, we need to ultimately say as a nation that there needs to be a maximum cap. There needs to be a cap on interest rates. Now, what we have proposed and introduced legislation to do would provide a maximum 15% interest rate on credit cards, except under exceptional circumstances when it can go higher. And the reason that we did that is that this is the law that credit unions all over our country have been operating under for 30 years. And the credit unions are not running to Washington for bailouts. They're doing pretty well. And we think if it can work for credit unions, it can work for private banks as well.
Well, I have great confidence and respect for you in you you will certainly go to bat this week as this is discussed. You will fight for your constituents, and you will fight for all the people in America. And I wish there were many more that have the same attitude as you do.
Thank you very much. And let me ask the listeners to contact their members of Congress on this issue. And if they would like to, write to me and tell me the experiences. I have not, for example, I have not heard before this discussion about what's going on in Florida. I would love to hear from people any place in the country about their experiences with the credit card industry. And just, you could do that by going to my website, sanders.senate.gov, and we are reading some of these statements right on the floor of the Senate. So if people have a problem, let us know about it.
Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, thank you so much for being on the program today. We're grateful to hear from you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Take care. Bye-bye.
There's a man that if we could clone in the United States Senate, there'd be a place to start right there. I've admired his liberalism for many, many years. I believe he is probably the most liberal senator that we have. I've admired his guts on many times when he has stood up and fought for an issue that was unpopular with others. He is a man that does not care what the press has to say. He is a man that does not care what big banking has to say or big insurance has to say. If you want to know what Bernie Sanders has in his heart and in his mind, just ask him. He'll tell you. He will not beat around the bush. He will not give you any phony baloney. Would that we all had United States senators in our states like Bernie Sanders. I've greatly admired him. I've met him several times. He's an engaging, warm, and interesting man, and he's one of us. And that's one of the things I like most about him. He is one of us. And I know when this issue comes up this weekend in the United States Senate, having already been through the House, I know that Bernie Sanders will fight for us. And isn't that what it's all about? I'm so tired of having people stand on the Senate floor and fight for the big banking industry, fight for the insurance agencies, fight for big business. To hell with us. And we know why. We know because it's the money that flows into their coffers for their re-election. And Bernie Sanders is not one of those people. And so, I wouldn't say all that in front of him. That would embarrass him. he's really a cool guy. I like Bernie Sanders. I always have. I've made no secret of that. Well, gosh, where's this first hour going? We've come up on the top of the hour already for the news. I do think, as far as the credit's concerned, I think the party's over. I don't think there's going to be very much credit to everyone and anyone who wants to buy a house or a car anymore. I don't think there's going to be any more credit card consumerism like there has been, and maybe that's a good thing. No more cheap food, because the petrochemical farming that we've been doing to keep yields up is going to disappear, or else it's going to get a whole lot more expensive, because the price of oil is going to go up drastically, and so fertilizer will go up, and the price of food will go up, and the peak oil thing's still with us. So we won't be buying as many cars, and we won't be building so many new houses, at least not at the rate that we used to. So, except the fact that millions of jobs will not be coming back, the good jobs I'm talking about. How many jobs will be provided by McDonald's and Burger King in the future, I really don't know. How many more associates, I love that, will Walmart actually need? And will those jobs pay anything close to what's needed to maintain a decent standard of living? At least the kind of living Americans have been used to. I don't think they will. So where does the American standard of living go from here? Do we have hope that we'll go back to where we were before this recession, the worst since the Great Depression? Well, Sean Hannity doesn't think it's so bad. He says things were a lot worse during the Carter administration, and that St. Ronald Reagan saved us all from certain financial ruin. I remember him saying that recently. But funny, I don't seem to remember having it bad at all during that time, and I don't seem to remember seeing Ronnie Reagan saving us from anything at all. I do remember the Republicans saying he saved us all from the red menace and the financial ruin, but I don't remember what the hell he actually was supposed to have saved us from. I guess it was they can't get over that Mr. Gorbachev tear down that wall. Well, anyway. Hey, we've got news coming up at the top of the hour, and we are going to have news at the top of the hour, and let's just let's fire up the people and get them ready here. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Hit on Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Boston Globe on Monday. reached a tentative agreement with unions representing 500 mailers, drivers, and pressroom operators. Negotiations are still underway, though, with the newspaper guild CWA representing newsroom staff. The New York Times, owner of the Globe, had threatened to issue a shutdown warning unless agreement could be reached, squeezing $20 million in cuts from the unions. The New York Times company said it's prepared to begin the process of shutting down the Boston Globe unless concessions agreements are reached. It's another sign of the financial crisis newspapers nationwide are facing as more people get their news from free Internet sites. University of Illinois professor Robert Greenlow has released a report that shows there wasn't a single proven case of union intimidation of workers in majority sign-up union organization drives over 6 years in Illinois. It puts the lie to a big business campaign that claims national majority sign-up union organizing under the Employee Free Choice Act would lead to union intimidation of workers. The report released yesterday concludes that Illinois has demonstrated that when majority sign-up is used to allow workers to choose unions, it can genuinely determine what the workers really want, free of intimidation, and can also ensure a fair process. Portions of Colorado could see grocery workers walking the picket lines if contract negotiations continue to sour. Jesse Russell reports.
On Friday, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 7 in Colorado filed charges with the National Labor Relations Board that grocery chains Safeway and King Soopers have failed to provide information necessary for collective bargaining. Additional charges were filed by the union against King Soopers, who has begun seeking temporary workers to replace the union members in the event of a strike. The chain is offering to pay those workers $10.25 per hour. That's more than the starting wage for many of the company's employees. Many workers will see their contracts with King Soopers, Safeway, and Albertsons expire on May 9. More than 17,000 workers are being represented by the UFCW in the contract negotiations.
May 9th is the 16th annual Letter Carriers Food Drive. Last year, food left on the front steps and homes provided more than 70,000 pounds of food for local communities. The Postal Service asks participants to leave a bag on the front step with non-perishable and dry goods. Now here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
The weak job market continues, with the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits last week at 6.1 million. The number of people filing for claims sets a new record for the 12th week in a row. And the number of jobless people in proportion to working people is at the highest level since the first month of 1983. Initial claims for unemployment benefits rose to 640,000. That's up 27,000 from the previous week.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like me.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Your countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
Oh,
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, we are back. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. Thank you for joining us here today. Say, I would be remiss if I didn't publicly say something. I sent him an email earlier this morning, but we want to wish Tom Hartman our condolences and with the loss of his mother. Always hard to lose your mom, and we want to wish Tom the very best and know that we're thinking about him. Tom Hartman, a heck of a guy. I don't know how many of you know Tom. I've had a chance to meet him quite a few times, and he is just as cerebral as what you hear on the program. Tom is a genius. Quite frankly, I believe Tom is a genius. I've sat and talked to him at a round table, for example, and have come to the conclusion there isn't anything Tom doesn't know. And there isn't anything Tom doesn't know, and yet he doesn't brag about it. He's one of the smartest people that I have ever met. He has a steel trap mind and is able to analyze just about any situation and come up with expert commentary. So our best wishes, our condolences to Tom Hartman in a sad, sad time for he and his family. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. We're going to be joined at the bottom of this hour by Eric Bollert of Media Matters, and we're going to talk about the hypocrisy of the Republicans. They're starting to make noise like they're going to filibuster any Obama Supreme Court judicial nomination. How they could do that is beyond me, because we'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. It's amazing. But then I don't want to act like I'm surprised by anything they do, because I'm really not. The desperation that is readily apparent over on the Republican side right now is just awesome to watch. It really is. I've never seen anything quite like it in all the years. I mean, when Democrats were out of power, yes, we were angry, we were worked up, we were trying to get back, get back control of the House and Senate and the White. But I've never seen them act like children before, and uninformed children, uninformed stupid children, I guess would be a better way to put it. It's really a delight to watch. And they are without question imploding. The whole party is imploding, and hey. You know, when something like that happens, when a Republican right-winger like that drowns, throw him an anchor, but you don't have to say anything. Oh, interesting. Had a couple of emails during the break there that wanted to know about these naked pictures of Miss California, the straight-laced, very moral, righteous, upright family values representative of the Republican Party, Carrie Prejean, Miss California, who made the, insulting remarks about gay people. It's on a blog spot, I was told here, by Joe, J-O-E-M-Y-G-O-D, joemygod.blogspot.com. So that's all the information I really have on it right now. I do want to report that I'm attending my wife and I will be attending a very nice affair this coming Friday. We're having a reception in Naples for DNC Chairman King, and have been invited to that and looking forward to going to it. It's a dress-up affair. We don't often get to do that here in Southwest Florida. We're so used to wearing our flowered shirts and shorts and flip-flops and all, you know. So we'll dress up for that. It's going to be quite a nice affair, I'm sure. Okay, let me see here where we are with the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, guys. This is Eric Peterson, Vermont. How are you doing?
Hey, another Vermonter. The show's loaded with him today.
Oh, gosh. You had a great interview with the lady from Code Pink, and you had a great interview with the esteemed Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont. And I really appreciated that very much.
Well, I talked to Bernie several times about coming on the show, and, you know, he's busy a lot. But then I told him my new view, and he said, I'll be on the show anytime. And so once I told him that, it was a shoe-in. That's a small state.
Well, I know. There's the cost of cheese, and there's cost of other things. Bernie's the best, really. He is really the real thing. He has to get in with the coalition of people within Congress that he does, but he really, it's a compromise for him in a lot of ways because that's something he has to go through. But he really has been. I don't know how much research you've done about Bernie, but he really is the real thing. And there's no question about that. And I posted out in your chat room, he beat out a Democratic incumbent mayor in Burlington, Vermont, back in the early 80s. And he's been right there. He's originally from the New York downstate area. And I think he went to Chicago in economics. I'm not really sure for his master's degree. I'm not 100% sure about that. But he does know his stuff. He doesn't compromise any more than he absolutely has to in terms of having any sort of affiliation with the coalition within Congress and so on and so forth, which is politics. But
well, you know, if you're going to kill rats, you got to go where the rats are.
Well,
that's kind
I'm
of
not
crude,
sure.
Crude
Republicans are all bad. Democrats. There's too much money, and I still would like to get back to election reform. I don't know what happened to that issue. I would still like to get back to the little machines that count our votes. I don't know what happened to that issue. Just because we got lucky in 2006 and we got lucky in 2008, I would still like to see both of those issues extremely revisited. The money is a crap game, and these guys are so loaded down with pre-commitments before the American people. And I'm not happy with that, and I'm sure a lot of the American people aren't also. I was going to say something, actually. It's the reason why I called, and I can't even remember what it was.
Well, neither do I remember what it was. So we're even.
Well, then we'll have to do a mind meld or something like that. Where's Mr. Spock when we really need him?
Yes, true.
It has something going on. Darned. I can't remember. But anyway, I'll go on to another thing. What do you think about Sessions being the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee?
I'm happy about it. I like that. The more they put forth the crazies in the party, the better I feel about it. And Sessions is another. He's a Republican inspector. He's another guy that he's in for Sessions, and that's all. So I like the fact that they put him up there. I really do.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, you're hitting a whole bunch of things. I mean, I'm going back. This past weekend, I did a whole bunch of investigation to the JFK assassination in 1963. I go back to Alan Spector with the magic bullet theory and everything else. And I think it's for convenience. I mean, a couple of nights ago, he's going to have to vote for the health care thing. For a single pair, that's not going to happen. I was on Democracy Now! A couple of days ago, and Feingold was there. It's not going to happen. There's too much money going from people that have too much control over our government and our agents of government, whether we elect them as the people, somehow they get compromised by the funds to elect them, and they feel a greater need to compromise the values of the people that actually elected them, rather than to compromise the dollars that elected them. And I guess we really need to go back and revisit election reform, and we need to do this. It's very important, and we've kind of let it go because we sort of like think that it's gone away, and the little DREs and the little voting machines, they've gone away. We got this. Then we get a little cocky, and I don't think we should get cocky right now. I think we need to go back to election reform. We need to go back to so many forms and in so many ways that we've gotten cocky because some of the people are getting a little bit, but we have a major problem with education and the mainstream media is actually programming the American people to think in a certain way. I'm dumbfounded that I start reading polls about what the American people think about torture. And I just cannot believe what the hell is going on with that. And it just absolutely dumbfounds me that people can't see through all the nonsense and say, this really needs to be done. We need to re-examine the 8 years. We need to go back to a lot of historical elements with our educational system that are not teaching kids with any sort of historical or civics-minded perspective of how you should be a good citizen to know the history. I saw Geronimo last night. I've seen the devastation of the American dream in terms of the indigenous people that lived here. And we were a great country. And I'm not putting that down, but the fact of the matter is that after we got rid of England and all the other European influences upon our country, we had manifest destiny, continentalism, or whatever justification we want to do it. But we stole this land. And I think the history books need to be honest about that. And more current, we need to be honest about what has happened over the last 8 years. We need to go back with the Democrats and the Republicans in the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which gives all the corporate interests a greater slice of the educational process that's not being done in our public school system, which I fully support, and I know that you do. And I'm rambling on.
Well, it's a heck of a note when people get their education from Fox News instead of our school system. And I'm seeing more of that all the time. I hate to think that Fox News is educating some folks, but they are. And that's a sad commentary on this country right there. It is. We're going to have, I was supposed to hear from him today, but I didn't. Probably tomorrow, I guess. I was supposed to have the president of the National Education Association on the program. We had him on when we were in Washington last, and I think we're going to have him on again. Maybe it's tomorrow. I have to look at the schedule a little bit. But people are asking, Eric, how was the maple syrup crop in Vermont this past year?
Oh, my God. Do I have to send you another one?
No, I'm not sending another one right now. I'm just asking how's the crop.
No. You're an economy.
No, we're not economy. We just want to know.
No.
I'm always concerned about how the corn crop was in Ohio.
Yes, we have big concerns for Vermont. Yes, I understand. I'm kidding.
I should have asked about the apple crop first.
The apple crop is wonderful.
Okay, and
we have Big Macs up here. We have great apples.
All right, and then it follows that I would ask as a concern about the economic trends in Vermont. And I know it's a big crop there, but that's the only reason.
Oh, County. This is the bastion of right wing stuff. We had a teabagging thing, 2.5 bloggers away from where the hell I am, and my God, I almost died. It was on the broad speaking system. It was crazy. The maple crop the maple crop was really good. I guess I owe you one, right?
Well, we hear sometimes that, you know, the crop was so good that, you know, you've...
Well, yeah, and that's great. And more seriously, a lot of times, you know, it's a matter, and I think you know from where you lived in Ohio, that it has a lot to do with the nights and the days, and the temperature changes during a certain period of the years when the trees are expecting to have warmer temperatures during the days and cooler temperatures during the nights because for whatever reason. And you think you know that.
I think that was pretty good this year. I think I may have discussed that with you, that I did help at a sugar camp when I was a kid in high school.
Yes, you did.
I remember that
from 4 or 5 years ago.
A beautiful sugar maple forest has now been cut down, and brings a tear to my eye when I think about that.
But I do think, I think a lot of the global warming perspective of the maple industry, I've been listening to a lot of stuff on the internet indicating that some of the more prime areas are going to be moving northward. Whether or not, in fact, that would be true in future years over a long term, I don't know. But I mean, it does play into factor quite a bit.
You see, folks, when you listen to the show, you get not only political information, but also you get agricultural information as well. You don't want me sending you anything from Florida here. Our sweet corn, I don't think, is very good. Tomatoes aren't. I shouldn't say that. There are other Florida people don't hear me say that, but you can't beat the produce from a little further north than here. Eric, hey, thanks for joining us on the program today. Always good to hear from you, and keep up the good fight in Vermont, and it was a pleasure to have your fellow Vermonter on the program today.
And I'm sorry I was rambling on so much. I
didn't hear him rambling.
Well, I was not really organized very well at all, but anyway... I thank you. You had a great show today. You're still having a great show. You had some great guests with the lady from Code Pink. And you had Bernie Sanders. And he really is the real thing. He's been standing up for this years and years and years. And he doesn't compromise.
You can tell when I'm looking in the eyes.
I thank you very much for having me on your show.
Thank you, Eric. See you
later. Have a good day. I'm still in chat room.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. Bernie Sanders, you can look him in the eye and know you're getting a straight talk from him. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break, and when we come back after this, I believe we'll get a hold of Eric Bullock from Media Matters. Let's do a Media Matters Minute to start off with here. Maybe. I guess we're not going to do a Media Matters Minute. Don't know what happened to that. So, let's do this instead.
Like a leaf in a tree, her love. town to cross over.
Back with the Guy Jane Show, and it's time for us to get time for us to get in touch with our next guest, and let's just go ahead and do it. We'll get the old phone up here. Once again, you get to hear live the whole business here. Five. Nine. Two. Well, let's see what this gets us here. This should get us Eric Bowler.
Hello, Eric?
Yes. Hey, Eric, this is Guy James from the Guy James Show.
How are you?
Well, I'm great. Let's just click the button here and go live on the air. We have Eric Bowler with us right now from Media Matters, and you all know Eric, that's for certain. We see him. How do you get yourself on TV so often?
We have people that do that for me.
I see.
Communications and PR department, they're always in touch with the TV shows.
Yeah, well, I've seen you on quite a bit and met you in Washington and all. Wanted to have you on today to talk a little bit about this hypocrisy that's taking place. We're starting to hear rumblings now from Republicans that they just might filibuster a judicial nomination if they don't please them. And, of course, this is coming from a group of people that seem that at one time, anyway, to have some sort of an aversion against filibustering.
Hypocrisy. Media Matters has gone back in because, you know, the news cycle and the media diet moves so fast, it's very easy to forget even very recent history. And so we went back into the distant past of 2004, 2005, 2006. And we found, examples of prominent, conservatives like Rich Lowry and the whole crew at the Weekly Standard and the Washington Times and the Rush Limbaugh show, and they were, quite adamant that Democrats absolutely should not filibuster any judicial nominee, and in part because that was the president's prerogative, and if they wanted to pick their own justices, they should win elections. And here we are in 2009, and Democrats won lots of elections, and we don't hear much from conservatives suggesting that filibuster is somehow anti-democratic.
Well, knowing and them knowing that we know that everything you say and do in politics today is recorded somewhere or written down, and knowing that we have all this information on them, how do they get away with doing this? How do they justify this? How do they do this without knowing that they really look kind of foolish doing this, saying something?
Well, they look foolish, but it's still a relatively small group of people who are paying attention to the specifics, and the mainstream press, the Sunday talk show hosts and things like that, they're not going to think they look foolish. They'll have all these people on, and all these people will talk about how Republicans, if they had a backbone, they would filibuster. Odds are David Gregory and George Stephanopoulos and Bob Schieffer and Wolf Blitzer, and they won't say anything. So it's sort of, I think it's this game that's played. The Republicans realize, particularly conservative commentators, realize they're very, very rarely challenged on these sort of obvious flip-flops and hypocrisy. So they're actually quite comfortable. They don't mind being wildly intellectually dishonest with their readers and their viewers. I think those people almost expect it, sort of. There's sort of a don't ask, don't tell thing going on. Tell us what we want to hear, and we'll pretend you weren't saying something opposite 4 years ago. So I don't think they mind that. But even from the mainstream press, they've done it so many times that why would they think, the mainstream press would suddenly change?
I guess. I mean, it's kind of like Boehner standing there, or Boehner recently standing there on the Capitol steps with that leaflet that he had, the Republican version of a budget, the one with no numbers in it. We didn't hear very much from the press on that at all. It sounded like it was a real authentic budget.
Yeah, I think that was so egregious. Even the press, they sort of, it was some mild ribbing, or they didn't quite take it as seriously as I think Republicans wanted. Oh my God, it was like a joke practically. And they're claiming they're hyping this thing they're going to come up with an alternative budget, and then they hand out these pieces of paper without any actual numbers on. I mean, if Democrats had done something like that, it would have been, I think, big news and a laughingstock and widely ridiculed. The Republicans did it, and I think the press just sort of quietly, you know, looked the other way, pretended it really didn't happen.
Well, this huge, massive liberal media that we have. Do you think the Republicans have the fortitude to go ahead with a filibuster, and do you think the Democrats will make them?
Oh, I you know, it's interesting. I think these Supreme Court battles have become quite predictable and quite predictable. So I don't think there was a chance that Alito or Roberts were ever going to be denied. And it was sort of a kabuki theater. I think, you know, obviously folks on the left were, lots of them were passionately opposed and people opposed them. I think the media really just sort of hypes this. You know, we've had like two or three actual interesting nominee battles in the last quarter century, and now the press, I think, automatically treats everyone like it's going to be this huge, you know, larger-than-life showdown. Traditionally, if you go back, they're not, and we had some anomalies, but obviously with the, you know, 60 Democrats, there's no way they can stop anything. And I think Mayanchu Obama will pick someone who will attract at least half a dozen Republican votes. So the whole thing will really be for naught. But I think the press is going to really play it up as sort of this Wild West showdown, even if the nominee ends up getting, you know, 75 votes or something.
Yeah, it was kind of like last week with the swine flu episode.
Yeah, I think the press, likes to hype the story because it's so easy to cover. You just... there's no real reporting. You just sort of go back and forth. This is what one file does. And they just sort of yammer, and they don't really ever go anywhere. And the story takes months to unfold, which they love. So it's an evergreen, and they love it. It takes almost, like I said, no reporting. And anyone can, you could pull them off the street. They could talk about it for 20 minutes. So that's sort of perfect for the Beltway press. It takes no preparation, and it's most of it's inconsequential.
Well, you want
I
to,
love it.
Do you want to give us the inside the Beltway scoop? This is your chance here to tell us who the nominee is going to be. I'm sure.
No, I have no idea. I leave that for.
I don't either.
People will pay a lot closer attention to the courts and things. So, my hunch is it'll be a relatively safe choice, and the press will still, you know, pretend like it's some big partisan showdown, but. I would be shocked if by the end of the summer we look back and we think, wow, that was a brawl. I can't believe that nominee barely passed by two votes. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
And we've stayed away from brawls.
Yeah.
We really have. We haven't had a good Donnybrook in there for a long, long time that I can remember.
And that's the norm. You know, again, there were a couple anomalies where they were sort of knocked down, but that's not the norm, and we're reverting much more to sort of the traditional path, which is sort of, you know, this kabuki theater where the minority, you know, shows its base that they're really upset. But in terms of votes and things, that, you know, Democrats had no chance of stopping the Bush nominees, and Republicans have no chance of stopping this nominee. I mean, 99%. But, again, the press is going to really hype it and pretend it's going to be this big brouhaha.
Well, speaking of hyping, this is a little bit off the subject that we were going to talk about today, but speaking of hype, why are the folks at Media Matters being so nasty and mean to Bill O'Reilly?
Always or recently?
Yeah, it just seems like Mr. Bill just is talking about Media Matters all the time these days. Mr. Bill is quite upset with you folks.
Yeah, well, you know, he needs his villains, and it's funny, you know, Obama is so popular, you know, 68% approval rating, and so O'Reilly gave his scorecard for Obama 100 days. He gave him a couple of Bs, and then he wrote a column sort of chastising Obama derangement syndrome, suggesting conservatives, you know, weren't giving the new president a chance. So It's funny, O'Reilly is sort of, he will put his finger to the wind at any moment if he feels like I think he's going too much in the minority. But, you know, we do what we do, and we post his transcripts and his videos, and I don't know why he gets so upset. I don't know why he's so angry.
Well, I just, I have great compassion for him, and I've seen him be visibly upset with you guys lately, and I thought, you know, maybe he just ought to get off his case because, you know, I think it's affecting him. I really think it is. But I also say that in the light that I don't want to admit to, because I have not watched Bill O'Reilly in some time. I've read about it a lot, and it's a great little saga that's going on, and I really do enjoy it quite a bit. But you guys should lay off just a little bit because
we'll take it under consideration.
Who knows? He might end up getting mad and yelling at his crew and, you know, F you and all that.
That's right. He'll have to do it live.
Hey, thanks so much for being on the program today. We appreciate it. We appreciate everything Media Matters does. It's for all of our listeners. Be sure and visit Media Matters if you haven't. Hell, I bet every one of you has many times a day, as a matter of fact. And I appreciate all the info that you folks send me every day. I don't know what we'd do without it.
Eric, yeah, that's great. Glad to hear it.
Thanks for being on the program today.
Talk to you soon.
Yep. They've just been so naughty and nasty and mean to Mr. Bill O'Reilly, and gee whiz. O'Reilly's one of those guys, you know, well, we should make a list. We should make a list of those who we think would turn on a dime just for the money. O'Reilly is one of those. He's a performer. He's an actor. He does not believe everything he says. Yes, he's got a nasty piece of temper. But politically, his ideology, who knows what it is? It is what it is, like Eric said, when he puts his finger to the wind. So he'll fit in the category of a guy that, yes, it would flip for a dime. Hannity, no. I believe Hannity, that's what makes me fear him. He's nuts. He would not flip. I don't think Mark Levin would flip. Who else? Mike Gallagher, I believe he would. Bortz would. Limbaugh would. Although he's got so much now, he wouldn't have to flip for the money. So some of these guys are legit, and keep that in mind when you listen to some of these people. Some of them are legit, some of them aren't. It's hard to say what they were when they were young, how their ideologies were formed when they were young, what their beliefs were. That's a way to tell a lot of times. I've been what I am my entire life politically and will remain so. The chances of changing, you know, for that $10 million contract that's coming soon, I'm sure, that won't sway me. I'll turn it down. Yeah. I would talk to him quite a bit about, don't you think we can work out a deal here somehow where you guys can, you know, anybody offering a $10 million contract. But no, would I change my ideals? Would I change what I believe in politically? Never. Never, 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 double never. And I know that you, my loyal listeners, will be there. Hey, I wanted to once again wish everybody a happy Cinco de Mayo Day. 5th of May, and also wanted to report, I got an email here a moment ago asking about how the fundraising was going on. We said we had to raise $3,000 in 3 months. We started that and went on April 1st. We're in the 5th day of May as of right now, and we've got $322, so we're a good bit behind schedule. Okay, that's a good bit behind schedule, so if you can throw a few bucks into the kitty, we hope you will. At theguyjamesshow.com, theguyjamesshow.com, there's a PayPal button on there, and you can contribute a single contribution, or you can sign up for monthly. And, you know, I could go on and be like the Roberts, what's his name, the preacher, Oral Roberts. What's the one now that's doing the show for him, the son? I can't think of his name. Well, anyway. Sign up for only $1,000 a month, folks, and I will personally bless the envelope that you sent the contributions in. I will say amen. And that's what we'll do. We'll stack them all up here like we do, and we will lay hands on all the contributions that come in, and we'll sit them here on the Guy James Show desk and lay hands on them, and amen. Say, give me an amen there. So if that's what we got to do, we'll do that. We will compromise that much. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to take and somebody did mention it is a Traveling Wilburys Day, and we will be back right after this. Back here with the Guy James Show in the waning minutes of the program today. Gosh, this has been one of those days where the time has just disappeared, that's for certain. I mean disappeared. I see ELO says she's cooking and dancing in the kitchen. Cooking what, I might add. It is just about that time, isn't it? Hey, I'm glad somebody has not forgotten about the torture issue. It seems to be something that was thrown away last week during the swine flu scare. And I don't want to downplay that any. Well, maybe downplay, maybe I do want to downplay it, but I don't want to diminish the importance of the swine flu thing. Everybody should take precautions. Everybody should wash their hands. Be careful. Have a heightened sense of awareness about it. But to have the nation going absolutely berserk like we did for a while last week is not a good thing. And we can thank the press for that. Every moment, every headline, they had the music, they had the calls, they had everything ready, didn't they? One wonders if they come up with these things this quick, or do they have them in the can ready to go? You know the music. Flying flu, look out, everybody's going to die. You know. 15 suspected cases of more coming up at news at 11. Well, you know. But getting back to what I was saying, I hope some people have not forgot about the torture issue. I see Senator Dodd from Connecticut has not forgot about it. He had an interview with some Connecticut bloggers, and he said that he believes waterboarding is torture. And for those of you that don't have a great deal of history on Senator Dodd, did you know that his father was a prosecutor in the Nuremberg trials? Yeah, he was, and he was a senator as well. So, isn't that an interesting family thing to have? Your father was a Nuremberg trial prosecutor. My God, how interesting. But he compares today's situation to the Nuremberg trials. And, you know, they ask him about how do you feel about prosecuting people who were involved in these torture decisions. And let me quote him. He said, "I don't know who the genius was in the room that night when they were discussing this, but if you're going to make a decision to release the documents, I presume every one of us here would then have a follow-up question, which is, what are you going to do with that information?" He went on to say, "In a sense, not to prosecute people or pursue them when these acts have occurred is, in a sense, to invite it again in some future administration. That's been my point all along." And when someone then pointed out that a lot of this stuff seems to point toward Cheney's office, Dodd replied, and I quote, "You gotta go where you gotta go." So, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And yesterday, Rush Limbaugh slammed the GOP's listening tour rebranding effort. Rush Limbaugh saying that the conservative movement does not need to listen to the American people. He said, "We need a teaching tour. Wouldn't we want to substitute the word teaching in anything Limbaugh says with the word indoctrination tour? Wouldn't that be more like it? We need a Republican indoctrination tour. Isn't that what the Fundy right has done the last few years? Isn't that what the Gingrich-led people did with their contract with America? We got to indoctrinate America.